Ave Maria, listeners. Once again, we reach the time for the Pro-Life Forum. This is Pro-Life Forum number 96, as we are sitting in the eve of the Immaculate, the Most Beautiful One, our Queen and Mother, the Beautiful Conception, the Conception of Conceptions. Tonight we continue the show on the theme of listening to Father Marty O'Shea, his words of wisdom. So we listen for his discourse on how to be holy, given again at the Helpers of God's Precious Infants Retreat in May this year. So we join him shortly and listen up for some wise words on the faith.
We should be sort of concerned about this, okay, is that Jesus, after he gave the new commandment, love one another as I've loved you, he says the way that you will be known as my disciples, okay, is not by rosary beads from the rearview mirror, okay, it is by the love you have for one another, okay. We won't be recognized as Jesus' followers by our crucifixes, by Roman colors, by even sisters' religious garb. Okay, it's a help and it's a witness, okay? Like my Roman color, right? Okay. My crucifix, right? My bumper sticker, right? But the fundamental way that we will be known as Jesus' disciples is by the sacrificial love that we live by in our everyday existence. Okay? Now, to back that up, okay, Jesus, in the Gospel, very helpfully gives us a parable that tells us about the final judgment. Okay? And that's the goats and the sheep. Mm. The people who are saved are the people who did the works of mercy for Jesus in the person of the least of his brethren, okay? The people who were lost were the people who didn't, who were caught up in the apathy, okay? And that led one priest that I admire greatly to say that apathy is radical evil, okay? Now, the word radical isn't about an ISIS terrorist, okay? The word radical comes from root, okay? So he was saying that apathy is the root of all evil, because the highest form of evil is that which causes us to go to the wrong place after the final judgment. And in the parable of the final judgment that Jesus breaks this open in the most direct way, it is apathy to the poor that puts people on the wrong side. Okay? When Paul is going to Damascus and he has his enlightenment, What did Jesus say to him? Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? Okay. If I was living the life of Riley, okay, I think it's quite conceivable that if I met Jesus, he could say, why are you persecuting me? If I wasn't living simply and sending my surplus to Rose and her poor children. I mean, isn't it quite conceivable, isn't it? I mean, I would be persecuting Rose. I would be depriving her children of life by living like devious in the gospel and just not being concerned about Rose and her children with all of the terrible diseases, okay? One of the things that Pope Francis has said is that wasting food is a sin, okay? And I think that one of the emblems that we have of this terrible apathy to what's going on in the world beyond us, okay, is wasting food, okay? Now, wasting food, okay, numerically, it's not a big deal, okay? I mean, I might say, throw away a slice of toast, or I might throw away half of an apple, okay? And it's maybe 50 pence or it's 70 pence, okay? But the message that it sends out, I think, is very, very loud. If I go to the American Embassy down in London and I burn a flag, what I'm doing is I'm disposing of maybe a pound's worth of fabric, right? Not a big deal. But what is the symbolic message that I'm sending out by burning a flag outside? It just speaks volumes, doesn't it? I mean, it is 1,000 times bigger than the fabric value of the flag, isn't it? Okay. So I'm not saying that we have to obsess about not wasting food. And sometimes you go to somebody's house and they put this big mountain of food on your plate and it would be gluttonous to eat the whole thing because you're not that hungry, okay? And you have to leave the food on the table, okay? I mean, what I will try to do is I'll try to put some on a side plate and I'll say, you know, Mrs. Murphy, can you put this into maybe a plastic container or tin foil, and I bring it home and I'll have it for my lunch tomorrow, right? But the actual message of wasting food, I think, generates an enormous message about where we're at, okay? Okay. Now, in case you think that I am going off here on my own bat, okay, what I have spoken to you about, I believe, is completely consistent with what we call Catholic social teaching, okay? Which, as you know, has been described as the Church's best kept secret, okay? Can I read to you paragraph 23 of Pope Paul VI's letter called Populorum Progressio? This was often a topic that our founder, who really lived this message, okay, the Gandhi message, okay? I can remember once I picked him up at the airport and we were coming home and he was hungry and I was hungry, so we went to a restaurant and we had a meal and he was only able to eat half of his meal and he insisted that the other half he put into tin foil, we bring it home and we ate it between us, you know, before him the air, okay? Now, it actually starts off with a quote that is 1 John 3:17, okay? It sounds like a very reasonable statement, but if we follow it through, it completely underpins the Gandhi principle, okay? St. John says, he who has the goods of this world, and that applies to all of us here, okay? And sees his brother in need, okay, as we can all know by what's going on in other parts of the world, okay, none of us are ignorant, okay, and closes his heart to him, okay, and spends money and other resources self-centeredly rather than selflessly. He says, how does the love of God abide in him? What he's basically saying is that the love of God doesn't abide in him. Can I read that again, okay?
Yes.
He who has the goods of this world and sees his brother in need and closes his heart to him, how does the love of God abide in him? Okay, and that's 1 John 3:17. Okay, and Paul goes on, okay? He says, everyone knows that the fathers of the church laid down the duty of the rich towards the poor in no uncertain terms. St. Ambrose said, you are not making a gift of what is yours to the poor man, but you are giving him back what is his. So when I do Gandhi with Rose, and I live very simply, and I give my money to whatever charity, and it gets to Rose, okay? And St. Ambrose says, Rose deserved that in the first place. I mean, that belonged to Rose. It didn't actually belong to me. Okay? So, I mean, Father Morty, you just did what you should. Okay? You just did your duty, okay? Okay, and he says, you have been appropriating things that are meant to be for the common good of everyone else. So, I mean, I've been stealing from the common pot that is meant to take care of everybody's strict needs. Now, this is continuing with St. Ambrose, okay? He says, the earth belongs to everyone, not to the rich. Okay? And he goes on to say, this now is back to Paul 6, okay? He says, these words indicate that the right to private property is not absolute and unconditional. And this just is not anywhere on people's consciousness. Okay? Just because if I go out, okay, and if I work very hard and I earn a lot of money and I have all of this stuff in my bank account, okay, and it's my private property, Pope Paul VI, St. Ambrose, and Jesus will tell me that it's not mine after all. It's not mine. Okay, I have a right to use what I need to have a basic car, basic clothes, basic food, basic, you know, standard of living, but everything else does not belong to me. It belongs to the poor. Even though I have worked, you know, 90-hour days and, you know, work really hard, and I think this is mine. But St. John the Evangelist, okay, Pope Paul VI, St. Ambrose, and Jesus doesn't agree with that. Okay. The fortune I have in the bank doesn't belong to me. What belongs to me is what I need for my own use, and the rest of it belongs to the poor. Is this radical stuff, is it? okay.
Would you like an additional actuarial reason to give the money away? That the investments now are very bad because the prospect of a good return on investments is rather slim. And something called the interest rate on index-linked government stock at the moment tends to be negative, which means that you expect your money now to be worth less, even if you invest it according to the approved investments in future years. So it's probably going to
another problem is that people may have money, they may think about the poor, but they think their future, old age for example, is more important, and they're reluctant to give to the poor.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I sort of been through this stuff with my dad, okay, because my dad You see, I mean, if you think about social teaching, okay, I mean, nursing home care in Ireland is kind of 800 euros a week. That's what my dad paid in the nursing home for the last 3 months of his life, okay? And I suppose, I mean, you could make the argument that you should make reasonable provision, because what happens back in Ireland is that if you have money in the bank, okay, that is used to pay for your needs, and then when that runs out, the state takes over. So, I mean, you could actually make an argument that you should put a certain amount aside, okay, and you run that down after you go into a nursing home, and then the state takes over, okay? And if you wanted to be kind of really, I suppose, just about it, you could say, well, if I drop dead of a heart attack before I go into the nursing home, everything that I have left over goes to the poor, rather than, you know, giving a legacy to my children, and they'll go off and become alcoholics, or they'll buy a new car or a new house, right? Yeah, so I mean, I'm not saying that this is all black and white, but what I'm saying is that I think that the second Gandhi principle is important, that when I make decisions about the future and those kinds of contingencies, okay, I still have to keep looking at Rose, okay, and Rose is out in South Sudan, okay, and her kids are distended stomachs and they're going to die soon, and they have dysentery and all this stuff. And yeah, so I have to, within me, let this tension of the terrible things that are happening elsewhere kind of go in to my overall balancing and decision making with how I kind of try to do the best thing.
What did you say the second Gandhi principle?
Okay,
was?
Yes, okay. The second Gandhi principle says... Okay, first one is live simply so others can simply live, right? Okay, the second Gandhi principle is, if you think that you need to spend money on something, okay, you want to buy a new car, you want to go on a cruise, or you want to, you know, buy a big mansion of a house, or you want to get new clothes, or, you know, whatever, okay, and you want to, you know, get the latest and greatest iPhone or laptop, right, okay, grand, okay, so if you think that you need to do that, okay, for a moment, look into Rose's eyes, okay, take on board her poverty as a person, because she's also with a distended stomach, okay, and all of her children who have this horrible suffering, and just for a second or two, take on board her plight. And if you still need to go off and get the latest iPhone or the new upper mid-range car or the cruise, go ahead and do it, okay? But if we're really honest with ourselves, not many of us would feel very good about going off and spending money in that self-centered way and ignoring the terrible situation that Rose is in. I mean, if our car has broken down and the garage man says, this thing is dead, okay, it'll never pass the MOT, bury the thing, okay, then, okay, I have a choice, okay, I can buy a 12-year-old Nissan Micra and I can spend 500 euros, okay, or I can go off and I can get a new Skoda Octavia, which might be about 23,000. That's my choice, okay? Now, I do need a car, but I have very reliable transportation with the 12-year-old Micra for 500. And which of the options I pick, I mean, most of us would say I would be duty-bound to buy the 12-year-old Micra for 500, okay, rather than the 22,000 Skoda, and give the difference to Rose and her family and the rest of the villagers out in South Sudan, right? dinners, right?
A lot of people say, I mean, an example would be, say, if you see beggars on the street, people say, I don't give them any money because they're going to use it for drugs or drink. No. But also, giving money abroad, people say, I don't give any money because it's full of corruption. You know, you don't know where your money's going to go to. So you end up not giving out money to anyone, you know?
So, I mean, we can use our own discretion, okay, with how we, because there's any number of charities, okay? But, I mean, that argument, Dennis, I don't think it will hold a lot of water on the Day of Judgment, okay? Because Jesus said, well, you know, there had to be a charity out there somewhere that would reliably have used your surplus for the common good and for the relieving of human suffering.
Okay.
Now, I have been a bit fixated on money, okay? And I've spoken about that, okay, almost from start to finish, okay? But there are three T's that sum up the resources that we have to work with, that we can spend self-centeredly or selflessly, okay? The first one is our treasure, which is the money, okay? The second one is our talents, okay? Patrick here has been doing lots of wonderful work for pro-life with establishing that link between breast cancer and ovarian. Okay, so I mean, but Patrick could have been off doing consultancy work and getting lots of big, you know, checks. Okay, so yeah, it's the use of our treasure, which is our money, the use of our talents, okay, and then the use of our time. Okay, think about the amount of hours practicing good Catholics spend watching trash television. Okay, try to get them out to join the Legion of Mary, or the SVP, or the Helpers of God's Precious Infants, or the Good Counsel Network, or whatever, and they'll laugh at you. What do you mean? I have my comfort zone, right? Okay. Think about the amount of time people spend in pubs. The money and the loss of talent and time spent in pubs. Okay. Think about the amount of time spent getting houses so clean that you could do open heart surgery inside in the bathroom, right? Okay. Think about gardens, you know. I mean, the botanical gardens would be, you know, second classes. I mean, some people, I mean, they're just works of art, right, okay? But is that for the glory of God and the salvation of souls, or is it for my own self-centered sense of what a posh house is about, okay?
And hobbies as well as another one.
Now, let me say one thing, okay? We do need, and I found this out myself, we do need to live within our limits, okay? And there have been times in my life when I have kind of worked myself almost into exhaustion, okay? So I've learned that, I mean, I have to respect my own, my limits, okay? So when I was in a very busy parish, I had to take a day off because I was so wound up with everything else for the other 6 days, okay? Typically, what I try to do is I stop doing church work at 9 o'clock at night, and then I do mindless things afterwards, listen to music or go for a walk or whatever, to get my head sorted out, okay? And maybe Dennis' hobbies would serve in that purpose, okay? But we should spend as much time as we can within our energy limits, working for the glory of God and the salvation of souls. And then God isn't going to begrudge us time to refresh us, to recreate ourselves. Because if we, I mean, we can get so kind of caught up with this, as I did at certain points in my life with pro-life work as a layman, that you end up with nervous exhaustion. And the fifth commandment tells us that we have to respect our bodily integrity. Now, St. Francis went blind in his early 40s, and he probably died as young as he did from his severe fasting. And I think that Saint Francis did acknowledge at the end of his life that he had mistreated his body. So we all have to discern the point of diminishing returns, give as much as we can, okay, but, you know, do that kind of with generosity, okay? With regard to the use of our time, I mean, we all know people in our life, cousins, relations, that are living alone and they're a bit depressed, and rather than watching television, we can ring them up on the phone, can't we, and just have a chat, okay? We mentioned grandchildren. I mean, yeah, there's all kinds of ways in which we can spend our time for a charitable purpose. I mean, with the corporate works, feed the hungry, clothe the naked, you know, Legion of Mary, SVP, help us, the God's precious and better. So I think of, you know, all of what I have been talking about, you know, it's really the gap that there is between cultural Christianity and evangelical Christianity. And a few places in Pope Francis's letter, he speaks about a journey to holiness. And this journey, as I said earlier, is there for all of us, okay? And, you know, because as we go along in life, we get a bigger sense of the big picture, we get grace and whatever. But I think that, you know, when we tune into this dimension of life, you know, we should at least try to do something about it and close the gap between where I'm at and the ideal, rather than just giving up and saying, you know, I'm just going to, So hopefully I've raised a flag for use in this, okay? Hopefully I haven't scandalized you, or I might have communicated a little bit of my own personal guilt thing about this, but anyway, right?
We need this to be selfless. We need it, we do. Well, when I retired, I've got a lump sum. And we looked at the lump sum, what can we do with it? The last thing you thought about was the poor. We buy a lot of holiday in the camping, so we buy a motorhome. Now, not the last thing you didn't think about the poor.
The problem, you see, Michael, is that this thing should start with the clergy.
Yeah, that's right.
And if the clergy are living lives that are upper middle class, then we have a really big problem.
Yeah.
A really big problem.
Yeah.
Because if the leaders aren't doing it, okay, then, you know, where do you go after that?
But priests don't have a vow of poverty, do they?
They have.
Yeah.
Have they?
They have, because of the new commandment. Love one another. Lay people don't have a vow of poverty per se. Priests don't have a vow of poverty per se. But we are all given by Jesus, without exception, the new commandment.
Yes.
Love one another as I have loved you. And without ever considering any other vow of poverty, that is the most binding vow of poverty that anybody can contemplate. It allows us no surplus in terms of how we live our lives with regard to the use of time, talent, and treasure. Another issue, which